Golf Smarter number 665. Have you checked out our link to TGW yet? You can find it in today's show notes or on the homepage of golfsmarter.com. And once you click on that link, an entirely new world of golf products and prices will open up to you. When I browse through their site, it's the proverbial kid in a candy store feeling. You can imagine that. Like you, over the last decade, I've been to a lot of golf product and golf retail websites, but I'm finding that TGW is unique. I really believe that. First of all, I've yet to think of a product or a brand that I couldn't find, and the prices are low. But right now with the sales and special holiday pricing, it's even more fun to see what they have. Not the right time for you to be buying new clubs? That's okay. Sure, you got to focus on gifts for everyone else. But that doesn't mean you can't look, right? Check this out. They have an awesome trade-in program so that you aren't stuck with your old clubs. The trade-in values are remarkably competitive. All trade-in transactions can be done completely online, and they provide free shipping of your trade-in club to their redemption center. So click on our link that will take you directly to the Golf Smarter listener page. From there, you can browse to your heart's delight. Well, there's no problem if you go to ggw.com, but we want to make sure that they know you've been referred to by Golf Smarter, and that's because we want to make this partnership work for them. There's so much more than just these holiday specials, but you can't take advantage of any of these deals if you don't click on the TGW ad at golfsmarter.com or on the link in this episode's show notes and blog. That's TGW, the Golf Warehouse, the sweetest spot in golf. The Decade Golf System has a way to remove the emotion from your decision-making with Scott Fawcett.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Scott.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to see where this conversation goes.
Yeah, well, so am I. I'm always interested in see where it's going to go. But we do have a good basis of conversation to begin with, and that is Decade Golf. Something that I've been reading all over the internet, and the fact that almost every person that I interview, I ask afterwards, is like, hey, you have any recommendations of people I should talk to? And everyone's like, yeah, Scott Fawcett. You should be talking to Scott Fawcett. Scott's got a great pro. You'll love Scott Fawcett. So you're
hey,
on,
at least
buddy.
Somebody loves me.
All right.
Nice.
Go.
that's funny.
I think that Decade Golf, from what I understand about it so far, you're a geek, aren't you?
Pretty much.
I mean, there are different types of geeks for golf. There's equipment geeks. There's practice geeks. You're a stat geek.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I am, but I honestly, it's funny. I really don't know how I've gotten to where I am with this deal. I've said it before in numerous podcasts, but I truly created this for my own game back in 2014. Creating this stats-based, math-based course management system. And then only because of injury did I go caddy for a junior golfer from my club when he won the Texas Amateur and the U.S. Junior. And it's funny because I say it all the time, man, if I had personally tried to implement Decade in the Texas Am in 2014, I would have completely butchered it because of expectation management, trying to force things. And only by caddying for him and removing the emotion from decision-making was I able to apply it essentially perfectly and watch this kid utilize it. Obviously, he's a great player, but watch him perfectly utilize it. And then only because of, you know, SMU being in Dallas and the next team and guy that I worked with really was Bryson DeChambeau, did I really see how big of a hole course management and mindset is in golf instruction. I truly had no idea, even with my experiences playing professional golf.
Okay, so you just clarified something for me, because everything that I read talked about this kid that you were caddying for who was not ranked anywhere, any place, and you started working with him. He ended up number three in the nation?
In the world, yeah.
In the world?
He was a great junior player with a ton of talent. And he just, you know, he qualified for the U.S. Junior at 12. I mean, this kid is amazing and loads of talent. He should have qualified for the U.S. Junior at 12, 13, and 14.
Wow.
But he had never really done anything. You know, he won some high school golf tournaments and stuff, but he never really did anything on a, you know, even a state scale. And in hindsight, it was probably because of course management. Again, this game, it's the only game in the world that is not taught on the actual field of competition. I mean, football, basketball, baseball, everything, you're at least on the field, whereas in golf, you're just sitting there hitting balls into a field on the range. And what's the hardest part about it is a golf shot that on a driving range can look terrible can actually be a completely functional golf shot. And I feel like a lot of people wind up making themselves mental on the range because they're hitting a 7-iron 16 yards right of their target and freaking out, whereas I was doing a deal with Aaron Wise, the 2018 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago, and his shot pattern with a 7-iron was 27 yards wide.
Wow.
And then that's controlled, normalized, no wind. And that's why I talk about the shot pattern being more like a shotgun than a sniper's rifle. Even the
best players
in the world. And that's a great analogy.
It's a great metaphor for that too.
Yeah. I mean, and again, at the end of the day, even the best players in the world technically don't really have a clue where it's going, let alone once you introduce wind. So again, golf is the only sport not taught on the field of competition, but it's also the sport that's played, the outdoor sport that's played with the ball in the air the longest of any sport in the world. So it's not like it's a 10-mile-an-hour wind tunnel. If it's a 10-mile-an-hour wind, it's blowing 5 to 15. An identical golf shot launched from a cannon 10 seconds apart can get hit with a 10-mile-an-hour different wind, and literally the exact same golf shot can go to a 40-foot different spot.
I mean, yes, it can.
It's just a it's
so wait,
the,
that's
it's
not
just
us.
Variance.
That's not
it's
us.
Not that's not us. No, no.
Oh,
we're
come
all
on.
It's
you mean I've done over 650 shows and you're telling me that's not us?
Nope. Blame God.
Oh, gosh. Well, I do that all the time. So you worked with this young man who was amazing, and then you got him number three in the world. But it wasn't Bryson DeChambeau.
Well, that was Will Zalatoris. He's now turned. It's hard for me because a lot of the amateurs that I work with, I can't say their name just because they can't be quote unquote endorsing a product.
Oh.
And so that's what's been hard for me for the last few years. Is a lot of my players are still amateur in college right now, but I've had players win three of the last four U.S. juniors, a few U.S. amateurs, four NCAA D1 titles, but
wow.
I can't say their names until they turn pro. And so it's kind of hard, but now as these kids are turning professional,
great. Okay.
I can start utilizing their name more. And
okay.
Yeah.
So you did work with Bryson though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, Bryson.
Talk about a geek.
I did. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I definitely feel like he's playing the role of geek. He's a geek. He's a really smart guy, good guy, works hard. I mean, someone you definitely want to root for. It's funny, he caught a lot of grief last year at the British Open, or this year, I guess, at the British Open, because he was kind of having a breakdown on the other end of the range. And that's the kind of thing that makes me, that endears a player to me even more, because I've been there. I've done that. I've broken every club in my bag on a driving range before while getting a lesson with Chris Como. I've been there. And, for him to catch grief on the Golf Channel, he's a 22-year-old kid who's made God knows how much money in a few years. And, again, just 3 years ago, he's sitting in my seminar as just a college junior, I guess, a college junior. Like, nobody's prepared for that shift. And it's kind of not fair. I actually just emailed Cameron Champ's dad yesterday just to tell him what a fantastic job I think he's done with his son and preparing him for this next step. And yeah, I was impressed with how good of a job he did the back nine at Jackson. But more importantly, I've been amazed at how well he's handled himself in the media, because it's just not easy to all of a sudden go from nobody knows me to everything you're being, you do is being watched. It's too much for young kids, and the ones that handle it are truly amazing, in my opinion.
Hmm. Well, you must be pretty proud of what Bryson's been able to do recently.
I mean, absolutely. I'm blown away. I mean, obviously, I think he was about number 57 in the world when he was sitting in my seminar. He'd already won the Transmiss Amateur, I believe. Like, he's a great player. But Bryson specifically in my seminar told Coach Enloe and myself that he aimed at every single flagstick. And Coach Enloe looked at him and was like, are you serious? And he said, all right, Bryson, I'm going to walk every single hole with you this spring, and we're going to do this to the letter of the law, and let's just see what happens. And, you know, Coach Enloe deserves as much praise as anyone for the improvement that Bryson had. Because he literally walked every single hole with him that spring semester, and Bryson's scoring average plummeted from the fall to the spring. And, you know, just like Zalatoris, here's a kid that's scoring average in high school golf. His senior year was like 71.8 or something like that. I mean, he's a good player. And his scoring average from the first day that I caddied for him for the next 12 calendar months was 69.5. So here's a kid that's a great player and overnight drops 2.5 strokes off of his game simply by thinking better, playing with more patience and discipline, and, you know, managing his golf game and emotions.
You know what we call that? Golf smarter.
Golf smarter. I mean, it's pretty much dead on accurate. I mean, it really, you know, it's funny though, because there's a quote that I had read years ago on Raymond Floyd's. I think it's on the back jacket of Raymond Floyd's, one of his books, saying, even if we had the identical game, I would still beat you 99 times out of 100. And what he's saying there is a very subtle point that his golf IQ and experience is something that even with the same skills, you couldn't overcome. And I've caddied now almost 2,000 holes for a couple guys on the PGA Tour and for Will. And for Kramer Hickok, whose dad and I are business partners on some stuff here in Dallas, and Kramer wound up getting through Q school while I was caddying for him. He wound up being the Canadian Tour, the McKinsey Tour Player of the Year the following year. He was second on the web.com money list last year, and he's out there playing on tour now. And it's just a hard game to learn how to play. Mm-hmm. You talk about getting in the weeds. I feel like I got in the weeds on that one. There was somewhere else I was going with that, but...
Don't worry about it. Early on when I was starting to play, I remember we played this 9-hole course. It was couple par fours and mostly par threes. And the first tee, they were working on the tee box. And so they turned it into 150 yard. Now it was a par four, but they turned it into like 150 yard hole. And I'll never forget, and it's because it's haunted me, that the pro that morning, when he let us out, he goes, oh yeah, you guys, go ahead. It's only 150 yards, but I still bet you guys only get a par or worse. It's like, gee, thanks.
You know, it's funny you say that, because it actually reminds me of something I had never even thought about. Number 9 at Glen Eagles in Plano, Texas on the King's Course, the green got washed away one time. And so they played it as just, they just shaved a temporary green down in the fairway, probably 220 off the tee. And they put like a literal bucket in the hole for the fairway, or in the fairway for the hole. And my buddies and I, you know, it was probably shut down for maybe 6 months. So let's be realistic here. We probably played it 50 or more times. Let's say there's 4 of us, so 200 times. And we were stunned that none of us had a hole in one in it, when in reality, the hole was still 240. Shot pattern at 240 is probably 55 or 60 yards wide. The bucket's 1 foot wide. Like, not hitting a 1 foot bucket in a 240-yard shot in 200 attempts is just not amazing. And yet we were just blown away that we never had a hole-in-one.
Just because the hole is that much bigger?
Yeah, no, it's a one-foot hole. Like, surely we can just knock it in there. Like, it's just insane how out of touch our expectations are with reality. And this, you know, I constantly am arguing with the architect mafia on Twitter here. They're just their expectations. They don't understand when they talk about hunting angles, and I can play to a side of the fairway to increase my chances of birdie from 7% to 10%. Like, you'll get that angle accidentally by aiming at the center of the fairway. You have a left side of your shot pattern, but trying to increase your birdie chances 3% when you increase your bogey chances 10% by seeking that's a bad trade-off. Mm-hmm. And I find it so weird that people can't grasp that, but I didn't either until, you know, writing a half a billion cells of Excel code to come up with this.
Wow.
Speaking of nerds.
And did you write the code?
Yeah. I mean, code's an aggressive word for just a 50 part formula buried in Excel's cells, but yeah.
Because you're a math nut. You like that stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got, you know, finance and statistics degrees and economics degree. I mean, I've got a math background, and then I've played a lot of poker in my time, and then I've, you know, played professional golf. So I just, you know, I'm by no means this, you know, again, I catch a lot of great people thinking that I think I'm the smartest guy on earth. World, I don't think I'm the smartest guy on the earth. I have a very unique combination of background experience and skill set that afforded me the idea to combine shot patterns and strokes gained together in a giant Excel spreadsheet and in theory solve course management. It just works perfectly too. It's
kind just of a long answer to say I'm the smartest guy on the golf course.
I doubt it. Mark Brody could run circles around me. And again, I say this all the time.
Yeah, but Mark really Brody wasn't competing at that level.
Well, again, and that's, I agree with that. And again, like Mark's a good friend, so I don't ever want to say anything that
he's been on the show
ever come across. Yeah, I wouldn't ever want to say anything because he's a great guy.
Great guy.
But my background definitely, I think, gives me a unique perspective to ask different questions of the same data. But then almost as importantly, I feel like my experience as a playing professional, I kind of know what's possible and what's not possible. And I know I can kind of sniff out like, oh, I'm not buying that. Like a concrete example of that is Phil Mickelson after the second round of Safeway, he said that he was putting great and he was making his 3 and 4 footers, which allowed him to get far more aggressive on his 20 footers. I sniffed BS on that. So I went into ShotLink and Tracker 2 where you can actually see the images, and I by hand went through all 72 holes. And I don't want to mess this up, but I'm going to mess it up maybe a little bit. But he had, I want to say, 33 putts between 10 and 30 feet, and he only got 3 of those more than 1 foot 3 inch past the hole. So here Phil is saying that I'm making my short putts so I can get aggressive from 20 feet. He left 45% of his putts from 10 to 30 feet short, and he only got, literally a handful more than 1.5 feet past the hole. So he's, again, it's just the old adage, do as I do, not as I say. Even Mickelson, one of the greatest players of all time, has literally no clue what he actually did in Safeway. That or he just, you know, really does think he's the greatest thing ever and sounds like it's a great soundbite, but it's just not what he actually did.
Well, it's part of the beauty of great golfers is they have no memory.
Yep.
Right? True. It's like you're not supposed to remember all the painful stuff. You're only supposed to remember the good stuff.
And that's what's funny, even going back to Mickelson, when you say that, from 0 to 5 feet that week, he was minus 0.49 strokes gained putting. It was actually the only 5-foot window that he was negative strokes gained putting in. And yet he said, I'm making my 3 and 4 footers so I can get more aggressive. Well, no, actually, your 3 and 4 footers are the only place you weren't putting good. And your 20 footers, you were leaving half of them short. I mean, it's just insane. But if you're a kid in college watching this and you're like, hell yeah, Mickelson's jamming him in from 20. Like, you know, Norman Zhang, who is obviously one of he's the next kid. You think Cameron Champ's great? Norman's just as good. There's so many players coming. And luckily, I just yesterday, pretty 99% sure that Norman's just hired me to try to help him. Norman specifically at Sanderson Farms on 17, I believe is in the third or the fourth round. He had like an 18 footer for birdie after kind of coming off messing up a couple holes, and he jammed it like 5.5 feet past the hole and missed it coming back. And that'll be once Norman's in Australia right now, but once he gets back, that's going to be the first putt I ask him about. The first shot, were you trying to make this because of frustration from, I don't think he birdied 14, the reachable par 5, and I don't think he birdied 15, the drivable par 4, and then he tries to jam a birdie putt in from like 18 feet, and your 18-foot make rate on tour is 20%. You just can't force a 1 in 5 occurrence to happen. And yet players, especially young players, do it all the time.
Wow. I'm going to take a quick time out. We'll be right back. Scott, of course, I want to start talking about Decade Golf. I want to talk about the app and how we can use it. But when you're talking to me, we're addressing a different audience. We're not talking about the elite players. Let's talk about my group of friends.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that. Is you know, I did design this for myself to try to win the U.S. Mid-Am, you know, elite tournament golf. And only, you know, I honestly just haven't played a whole lot of golf with people that shoot over 80 in the last 20 years of my life. But
dude, you need to get out more.
Yeah. Well, but what's been great is, you know, so after Bryson won the NCAAs and the U.S. Amateur, and he was mentioning me by name in his press conferences, Joe Buck's talking about me on TV by name.
I saw that. That was very cool.
The NCAA called me and they asked me, you know, what I'm doing. They wound up banning me, calling my seminar an unfair competitive advantage.
Wait.
So as a reason,
what does that mean? What, you mean they banned you?
I don't know, but if they're gonna,
you're not on the course.
Well, I know, and that's what they originally told me, was that if I teach what I teach indoors, then it's totally fine. They consider me a mindset, a psychologist. Well, I went and bought a drone and I filmed a whole bunch of golf stuff and played it indoors, which is what they told me I could do, which is why the teams that I worked with didn't get in trouble, because they had approved it originally. And then, you know, hopefully, like all good things, you just figure out a way to stay within the rules and teach what you teach, which is, you know, what I did. So found out, you know, that I'm teaching strategy, they banned me from working in person because they considered me a third paid coach.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, honestly, though, it was a beating. I went, you know, my seminar is almost 4 hours long, and yeah, I went and did it.
These are students. That's not a seminar. Yeah. That's a class. You get units for
that. Well, I'm saying for me giving it, I gave it three straight days and then did a junior clinic one time. So I did four straight days of four-hour seminar, which I'm not Tony Robbins. That's a lot of talking and moving and traveling, and it was a lot. So I really, honestly, it was a pain. I didn't like it. And so they, you know, conveniently, when they banned me, they wrote the ruling that my seminar was an unfair competitive advantage, which is a nice door prize on the way out. but as a result, I created, you know, the Decade app, which is essentially, you know, the tutorial content's about 3 hours long. My seminar is about 4 hours long. So there's some stuff that you get by coming to the seminar instead of just the app, but the gist of it is in the app. But as a result, so I created this app where players now track their stats in it. And what's been cool, going back to the more average golfer, you know, we were trying to come up with some ideas for, you know, targeted marketing on Facebook and Twitter. And so we were just running stats through our database. And I told my program, I'm like, you know what, why don't you run a stat that just sees, have the players first 10 rounds they enter, get an average score, and then tell me what their average score is on every subsequent round. So, you know, what kind of a player are you essentially on your first, I think it was, I might've done five rounds. I think 10 rounds was too much. It was taking too long. I think we went to five rounds. And so 81% of the players had improved by an average of 4.1 strokes on their rounds six and further versus their first five.
Wow.
I mean, and so this is where I catch grief all the time about people saying nothing lowers scores overnight. You can't say that. I'm like, well, I don't know if you consider five rounds overnight. Okay, over 2 weeks, literally 4.1 shots. And now we're talking about players averaging over 80. That was their, that's their results. If you average under 80, obviously you have less to give away. But I want to say that number, and I'm pulling this one off the top of my head, was like 76% of people had improved by like 2.3 strokes on rounds six and beyond versus their first five. And those are people shooting in the 70s already, where you've got less room for improvement.
Sure. That is remarkable. I'd love to be able to cut that many out on a regular basis.
Wow. Well, it's fun. I mean, honestly, I'm not a golf instructor. I'm by design staying amateur. I mean, I would love to get out there and teach mechanics and everything, but I get, you know, a lot of PGA Tour instructors referring their players to me. And I just know that if I were, you know, a fellow teaching professional, that pipeline would slow down. And it's just a lot of fun to get out there with these great young players and teach them how the game works. But then it's honestly even more fun for me, because I beat my head into the wall as, you know, as a beginning golfer, taking it all the way to winning 10 times professionally and playing the US Open. I know how hard that journey is. And I get emails and direct messages almost every day from people saying, man, I just broke 80 for the first time. I did this. Like, that's as rewarding or more than having a guy go make a few million bucks. Now, if the guy that made a few million bucks gave me a percentage of it, that might change my opinion. But
yeah, right.
It really is fun watching the average player just get better and enjoy the game more overnight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get emails from people saying that their scores have gone down because of the podcast. And it's like, I never touched your clubs. How can you give me credit for your game improvement? But it is a great feeling. And that's what kind of sucks you back in and wanting to keep going with this. You said something a little bit earlier that I really want to break down because I find it so interesting. You're trying to remove emotion from decision making. Can you please break that down more?
Well, emotion clouds all judgment, period. I mean, you don't think better, I don't care who you are, with emotion in your decision making process. And kind of a stupid analogy, but it's a great one, is if a plane were crashing and you were sitting in the plane, would you want your pilot running around with his hands in the air screaming, or just sitting down calmly with a checklist going through, okay, left engine out, what do I do? Bam, 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 no big deal. The checklist processes remove emotion, which just helps you make better decisions. I'm not going to say it's going to work out every time. Planes still crash. But you're going to have a better chance by doing that. And like I say, that's the thing that caddying for Will and Kramer and, you know, Doc Redman, last year's U.S. Amateur champ, caddying for them just removes it. I don't have to hit the shot. I don't care what you do. A kid that is still an amateur, but that I have helped, that won the U.S. Junior a couple of years ago, when we've gone out and played, you just don't bring your golf clubs. I don't care where you hit your seven. I don't care what your swing looks like. It's not what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about is how to help you manage your shot pattern around a golf course. And technically, the last result that I need to have happen is, let's pretend a pin is 5 yards from a left edge. I give you a target that's 5 yards towards the middle of the green. And then you accidentally, luckily, unluckily, hit it in the right side of your shot pattern. So now you're 45 feet from the hole. You three putt it for bogey. And you think to yourself, if I just aimed at the flag, I would have only been 20 feet and I wouldn't have three putted. They wind up blaming strategy for variance. And what they have to understand is all of that is baked into the math. I know you're going to hit it on the right side of your shot pattern. I know you're going to three putt 10% of the time from 45 feet. I don't care. That's just in there. Mm. But that exact same golf shot, if you had hit it on the left side of your shot pattern, would have been 1 foot. And this is what's interesting, expectation management. I see players all the time acting like a shot was terrible, that was 5 yards right of their target, when if it had just been 5 yards left of their target, it would have been in the hole. Like, again, that's variance. It's a really hard thing to explain. I've got a video that I'm working on right now for my app, which is Cameron Champ and his caddy talking through their target on 13. And you very clearly hear the 13, the par three at Sanderson. You very clearly hear the caddy say, can you commit to a target that's 4 yards left of the pin? And Cameron says, yes. And then he hits it 9 feet right of the hole. I mean, that would have looked like an amazing shot. He's firing it right at the pin. No, his target was 4 yards left of the pin. That's variance. It just happened to finish on the correct side of his shot pattern, the lucky side of his shot pattern, make the putt, move on. And that's, if you manage that shot pattern for 72 straight holes, or more importantly, for an entire season or your entire career or your entire club championship, you will shoot lower. It's truly impossible not to.
At what distance see if I can word this so the geek can get this correct. at what distance does skill overtake luck on the ball getting in the hole? It's like if a hole in one.
Technically, let's technically say 8 feet. And I know you're talking about yards. An 8 foot putt on the PGA Tour is 50-50.
Wow.
So it means a 9 foot putt is technically 45%. In my opinion, if something is less than 50% and it happens, it's kind of lucky. Technically, if something's 90% and it happens, it's kind of lucky. If we had 10 playing cards laid out on a desk and I told you to pick out the three and you did it, you technically got lucky. Not real lucky, but a little bit lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, excuse me. I'm trying to say the opposite of that would be if I had 10 cards playing out there and I said, pick anything but the three.
Oh, okay.
And you did it. You technically got lucky because there was a 1 in 10 chance you were going to pick a three.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, the better you are, the tighter your shot pattern, the less lucky you have to get. But even Tiger, I'm pulling this up, but Tiger, let's just say he was roughly a 2.5 strokes gained average player. Well, so he's starting the week 10 shots ahead of the field average. Even Tiger, technically, the weeks he won, he did something to beat his average. And I believe that something is variance. I don't believe Tiger just magically played better, you know, 6 times a year. He just managed his shot patterns and waited out variance and knows that if I do this correctly, it's gonna work out some. Hmm. And again, I say this all the time in my seminar, but this isn't tennis. If we're playing tennis and I'm better than you, I'm going to beat you really often. If your name's not Federer or Nadal, you haven't won a whole lot of majors in the last 15 years. I mean, they're the best, mm-hmm. but that's just not the way golf works. You know, even Jordan Spieth with the amazing start to his career, and I don't know what the number is now, but I feel like he had like 11 wins in his first 140 starts. It's like an 8% win rate. It's amazing. It's one of the best in the world, obviously.
Yeah, especially coming right out of being an amateur. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's just not mind blowing. It's totally mind blowing. I'm saying if you said someone has an 8% win rate in the NFL, would you think that's good? An 8% win rate in tennis? No, I mean,
no, they'd be out of work really soon,
really, really fast.
Yeah,
it's a tough one. The fact is
that you chip it in, you get a hole in one, you get an eagle from the fairway. That's a pretty lucky shot. Right? I mean, it's like, yeah, these guys are good, and yeah, they're on television, and they're showing, going, watch this one. You know, it's because it's unique. It's special. That doesn't happen a lot. So you're saying 8 feet.
Well, I mean, I'm creating a video series for Jeff Smith's new website, Course Kings. And in it, I'm talking about variance. And we did a lot of filming, like I say, with Aaron Wise out in Vegas at TPC Summerlin a couple weeks ago. And when I came up to the 17th hole, there's a plaque on the tee box side of Jonathan Bird's hole-in-one in the playoff back in 2010. And, I've worked with Jordan's his brother, the Clemson coach. I've worked with Jonathan, so I set my decade baseball hat next to it and took a picture of it and sent it to him. And he replied, I wasn't aiming anywhere near the hole. I was aiming at least 9 to 10 yards right of the hole. Wow. And it went in the hole for a hole-in-one in a playoff to win. That's absurd.
That's great. That's a great story, though. It's a great story.
Yeah.
Great setup. Thank you so much. But we yet to discuss this app that you have, the Decade Golf app, which I think is why we're all here. Are there different versions of it? Did I miss some? Because I downloaded it when I went to create an account. It said, all right, that's going to cost you. It's like, wait, what? Because I wasn't.
Yeah. So the app is, there's a light version and an elite version.
Uh-huh.
And the elite is, it's interesting. The light version, I think it's $50 or $60. You can obviously download anything
50.
For free. And then I guess, yeah, some things, you know, have in-app purchases or whatever.
Right.
The light version you buy via your app store, whether that's Apple or Android. And that light version, it contains the entire stats portal. It contains, I think, about an hour of tutorial content that is stripped down. I mean, I don't need to be trying to tell a guy who shoots 85, you need to be calculating these targets to the yard from the edge of the green. It's too much information. I'm trying to give the person who averages over 80 a glimpse behind the curtain a little bit. And almost as importantly for junior golfers who are on a trajectory to be breaking 80 soon. So I've kind of related that to myself at 14 or 15. What could I have handled? You know, what is your golf IQ ready for? And so that light version is what that is designed to be. It's just introductory. It gets you in and tracking stats, which transition with you into the elite version. It just kind of gets you thinking in the direction of correct. Then once you can break 80, or you're again a junior, and juniors have a much steeper trajectory than a 32-year-old typically with improvement, this is the only reason I say juniors that are on the trajectory to break 80. Then the elite version is designed for you. And that is, you know, like I say, it's 3 hours of content that is everything that I teach PGA Tour players, which I know sounds crazy, but it really is. Strategy is generic. It doesn't matter if you draw it faded. It doesn't matter what you shoot. Your shot pattern has a size, and that's all baked into the math, period. So once you start tracking your statistics in that, then, and also honestly for the light version too, the algorithms that we've written into the code will find where your flaws are. So the best example I give is most stats programs just say, oh, you're three putting too much. Well, it's not really very helpful. Why am I three putting too much? Is it speed control? Is it line? Is it direction? I mean, why am I three putting too much? Is it short putts? And we've written the code to where it combines your short putt make rate with your leave short make rate, with your overall three putt rate, and it can figure out why you're three putting. And then we have a library of a couple hundred videos in the background that has about, you know, another 10 hours of content where it just selects like a 4 to 6 minute video once a week and sends it to you that then allows you to take a drill, or just it'll help you tidy up a strategy point, because maybe your scoring average from the left rough is terrible compared to your scoring average from the right rough. I don't really have anything to tell you that you might be doing wrong aside from the fact, notice that you're doing that. So when you find yourself in that situation, you're aware, this is where I'm averaging, you know, 3.5 strokes to hole out from, bogey 50% of the time. What can I do to better that? And that by definition will lower your scores. I hate saying it, but because it's my app, but it's a really cool app. Mm-hmm. It really serves game improvement and course management and strategy and psychology as much as anything.
Wow.
Really, really well.
Wow. So basically what you're saying is the scorecard gives you the what, but these stats provide the why.
Yeah. And the how to fix.
Isn't instruction how to fix, or, you know, just getting stats doesn't tell you how, right?
Well, again, yes, but back to the three putt example. Telling someone who's three putting 10% of the time to three putt less isn't very helpful. How do I three putt less? That is either typically speed control or short putting. Mm-hmm. So depending on your stat profile, it will tell you, here's a 3 foot drill to do. Here's a speed drill to do. Mm. It actually seeks out why you're doing what you're doing wrong and then prescribes to you how you fix that. And again, a lot of it, without people even knowing it, it's just subliminal psychology being put in there. I mean, that's, you know, back to Norman, the algorithm would find him three putting from 18 feet and for sure be like, hey, did you kind of go brain dead here trying to make that? And, you know, this is where you have to be your own monitor and be like, yeah. I don't know his answer. We've just started trading emails yesterday. I don't know the answer to that, but I guarantee you that's going to be the answer. I've done it. I've done it 1,000 times. I know what you're thinking because I've done it before.
Hmm. So once, do you know, you mentioned that the Elite app is somewhere around $50.
The elite version's 200.
It's 200.
The light version is 50. The Elite is 200. And okay. The reason, I mean, again, I hate doing this, but we sell this app to 100 colleges, and I can't offer discounts to amateurs. And in order to price it, it's honestly basically the NCAA setting my price for me. I just can't discount it.
Oh, wow.
It sucks, but it is what it is. You know, but again, I also tried to price it at the cost of a playing lesson.
Sure. That makes
sense. It's 10 hours of content. I stand by the fact that I get enough people telling me that the putting video alone in it, because a lot of people struggle with putting, I get enough people telling me that the putting video alone is worth 200 that I don't feel bad about it at all.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, yeah. in the app, it's a very fair price, and you're right, you know, $50 comparing it to just taking one lesson, but in the app ecosystem, you see $50 and it's like, wow.
No, I know. And that's it's really interesting because it's not, you know, again, you're up against a free app or this. Well, it's not designed to be that. It's technically a a playing lesson, but that's the only way you can sell it is right. in the app store.
Well, even some of the pro machines like Game Golf or Akros, those things, those are good, but they're not telling you the same thing that yours is saying, right?
Well, I mean, and again, like with Akros and Game Golf, like I've looked at them. I'm sure they're neat, but in my opinion, telling me what my average 7-iron is essentially useless information. Because there's downwind, into the wind, flighted, hooked, fade. I mean, I need to know with my stock 7-iron on a driving range with no wind, what does that go? And then I need to have the golf IQ to adjust it for situations. But taking just every single 7-iron that I ever hit and telling me what my average is, I think that's completely useless information.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Okay. Well, I mean, I have to say, coming from a very amateur, non-competitive place, that it really did solidify, because you know this, most golfers think they hit the ball farther than they actually do.
And that's actually, I shouldn't say useless. That's probably a pretty interesting point.
Yeah, because it did teach me that it's like, you know what? I should be clubbing up on all these shots because I think that I hit my 8-iron 135 when I actually hit it 128. You know, type of thing.
I agree with that, but that's exactly what I just said. Is that something you can figure out on a driving range, normalizing it with TrackMan yourself? And I understand not everyone has access to a TrackMan, but if you're really trying to play golf at your personal highest level, spending $75 to go have an hour of bay time. And again, this is the difference is even on the first thing that I teach my PGA Tour players is y'all suck to front hole locations. They are trying, let's pretend they're 155 to the front, 160 to the pin. They are trying to land at 157 and stuff it. And they come up short all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's pretend a PGA Tour player hits his wedge 135. They're never going to accidentally hit it 142. It will not happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they will mishit it to 128 all the time. So even though the tour players like to laugh at amateurs saying, oh, they're playing for their 80th percentile quality shot every time. I'm like, you are too. Like, you literally are too. Now, your 20th percentile is closer to your 80th percentile than an amateur's, but you literally suck at this also. I mean, Bo Hostler, you know, it's raining names because that's what I do, but Bo Hostler last year called me the week before Houston, and he said, man, I'm not getting any looks right now. When a player tells me that, I'm going to go through their last 12 rounds. I'm going to look at their shots from 80 to 130 and how they played the par fives. And it was just very clear, man, with his wedges, he's coming up short. I have no idea how he fixed it. I don't care. That's something between him and Cameron McCormick, his swing instructor. Y'all figure out, hey, maybe it's just tell your caddy to just tell me 5 yards further. Like, if I'm 125, actually just tell me 130. I have no idea. I don't care. But here's a guy that literally on Wednesday was freaking out. I'm not getting any looks. I took 6 hours, went through his rounds, explained it all to him and his caddy on Monday. He led the field in birdies and lost in a playoff that week. Like, wow. Sometimes it's that simple.
Wow. Wow. That's,
you know,
amazing.
In amateur golf, it's the same. It's literally the same thing. And that's the whole deal, is the prescription of hit your wedges closer. That's what a normal stats program would have told Bo. Your proximity is terrible. Okay, why? Well, because you're leaving everything short. Oh, that's helpful.
Right. Right. So interesting.
That's the goal. Yeah.
So how do we find your website?
Playinglesson.com. Not plural. Playinglesson.com. On Twitter, I'm Scott Fawcett, ScottFawcett. And if you just Google Decade Golf, at this point it's pretty saturated out there. You know, I've got a YouTube channel with a bunch of free content. I really do try to just deliver some free value. Then I get sucked into the weeds on some of these Twitter arguments, but I really do try to put out, and if you follow along, I'm not just arguing. If you're following along with a critical eye, I'm trying to teach the people that are actually open to learning. Now, it typically is because I'm running into somebody who's not open to learning. such is life.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so, just different. I mean, again, this is where There's some great architects out there, but this guy's like, math can't solve number 14 at St. Andrews. Yes, it can. With a satellite image and a shot pattern and strokes gain, it 100% can solve it. And he's like, how can an equation solve a great test that the architects in 1800 asked? Because they didn't know a satellite would exist eventually. Now I can look at it from above, I can lay a shot pattern over it, and I can tell you exactly the cheapest way to play any hole from my office. Now, are there occasionally bumps and terrain that I can't tell? Obviously, but it works 90% of the time. And my goal with Decade and the app is to teach my players, here's what you look for on the satellite. Now, when you play your practice round, figure out, hey, oh no, actually the left 20 yards of this runs off down into a ravine. Okay, cool. I couldn't tell that. But that's not the norm. Does it happen? Absolutely. My players understand how to look for that. And that's the difference where I just think that people are set in their ways. They're just like, it can't be solved by an equation. And it's, how else would you make the decision? Just from your gut? Yeah. You're doing math in your head, whether you know it or not, when you make a decision.
Right.
Period.
Yep. Yep.
I'm just quantifying it.
Right. So good.
So you can repeat it.
Yeah. Again and again. That's
again
point.
And again. Well, yeah. And that's what's funny is, you know, all these young guns that are coming out on tour and winning all these things that, you know, half of them have sat through, you know, Bryson and Cameron Champ have sat through my seminar. Aaron Wise, last year's Rookie of the Year, learns all of Decade through Jeff Smith. I mean, there's just, I hate saying it, but 95% of the guys under 25, maybe 24 even, that you've heard of that are coming out there, I work with. Mm. And this is how their learning curve is being shortened.
You know, I've often asked that question is, do they have the emotional capacity? I'm sure they can hit the ball really far and with some accuracy, but do they have the emotional capacity to play at that level? And they seem to, over the last couple of years, seem to be proving it that they can.
Yep. Because we've removed emotion from decision-making.
Again, back to did you just tie that one up? Whoa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it. I mean, well, again, so the architect that was arguing with me from Australia who brought up number 14 at St. Andrews, I guess the beadies are the little pot bunkers on the left off the tee. There's 55 yards between the beadies and OB right. And he's like, what if it's into the wind? You can't carry the beadies. I don't care. They're in play. I'd rather hit it in the beadies than out of bounds. So my target is 35 yards left of the OB stake, which means the beadies are in the left third of my shot pattern. If I can't carry them, it is what it is. If I hit it in them, it's variance. I don't care. And sure, it sucks. Let's pretend you're on you're coming down the stretch to win the British Open and you're on 14 and you need birdie and yada, yada, yada. I really don't want to be in the beadies. The only way to not be in the beadies is by shifting your shot pattern further right and hitting it OB more. That's a bad idea. It's not a matter of just sacking up and being clutch and hitting a great shot. It's a matter of waiting out variance because golf is a really hard sport.
Yes, it is. But you're trying to make it easier, and I think that you have come up with something that does make it, I don't know if easier is the right word, but better?
I think easier is the right word.
Okay, then let's use that.
I mean,
that.
I do.
All right. All right, playinglesson.com. That's Scott Fawcett. F-A-W-C-E-T-T. Scott, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for sharing your time.
You.
And best of luck. And, we'll have another conversation about the NC2A later.
I'm in. Thank you, Fred.
Wow. We're down to our last three prizes in the giveaway that started back in August. And the reason I was excited to share this conversation with Scott now is because he's generously provided a one-year subscription to the Decade Golf System app. Can you imagine how much you can learn about your game with 1 year of collecting data? I'm really excited to do it because he gave me one too. And since the last two prizes that we're giving out are so valuable, I want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to sign up. I know that not everyone listens to each new episode when it's released. That's just part of the nature of podcasting. So I wanted to give you an extra week, especially this time of year, to make sure your name is on the list and eligible for these final prizes. So here's what we're going to do. Next week, we'll give away our Golf Smarter Championship Toolkit, which includes the exclusive Golf Smarter cap that you may have seen our Top Golf winners wearing. You'll also get a sleeve of Dixon Earth balls with the Golf Smarter logo, a set of Shoe Tips thought reminders, a windage wind powder to help you play the wind, the Extraordinary Golf DVD by Fred Shoemaker, two books on peak performance by Scott Ford, and the book Selling on the Green. Quite the package, and that's why we're calling it the Golf Smarter Championship Toolkit. That's next week. Then I'm going to give you 2 weeks to register for the year-long Decade Golf app subscription, which we'll announce on episode 668 that will be published on December 18th. And then only 1 week later, on Christmas Day, 12/25/18, we'll announce our grand prize winner of a Seymour putter. So make sure your name is on the list to win one of these great prizes. And if you've already registered once, you are still eligible. I'm not taking any names off the list just because you've won. You're eligible for every single prize that we have, whether you've won or not. Now, deadline to enter is Sunday, midnight Pacific time, or 3 a.m. Eastern time, which I guess is Monday at that point. Sign up now at golfsmarter.com/giveaway. But now we have to focus on this week's prize, which is a complete set of 5 books from author and longtime Golf Smarter listener, Richard E. Todd. Titles include Golf Rules, Golf Etiquette, Short Stories from the Long Links, A Collection of Golf-Related Tales, Volumes 1 and 2, and his Golf Course Journal for you to keep track of your rounds. Richard has been listening to Golf Smarter for such a long time that there's one story in Short Stories number 1 called An Accidental Golf Career that I'm pretty sure is about me. But now let's congratulate Golf Smarter listener Jim Cunningham of Dallas, Texas, who's going to receive Richard's books in the mail. Thanks, Jim, for your participation. And thanks again, Richard, for your kind words in the book and your generous gift to our listeners. All of Richard's books are available at Amazon, and they're listed under Richard E. Todd, T-O-D-D, that's 2 D's, Richard E. Todd. Now, don't forget to click on the TGW ad. Take advantage of the best prices in golf. The link is in your show notes today or on the homepage of golfsmarter.com. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at golfsmarter. You can also find Golf Smarter now on Spotify. I'm very excited about that. And if you have any questions for me beyond those ways, how about clicking on the Hey Fred button? You know where that is? You do. It's at golfsmarter.com.